Ready for the mosh pit, Shaka Bra.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to StrangeCast, Player One vs. World's Life is Strange podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Adnan. My other co-host, Adam, is here. Adam, you're here.
I'm here. The Sixers are recovering, sort of, and I'm present, sort of.
You are present, and it's been a while since it as well, because I think the Super Bowl happened after our last episode as well, and my boy Travis was playing as well. Wished him best of luck.
But different sport. But yes.
Different sport. Yes.
Football and basketball.
I love when you send me black basketball videos. I'm like trying to watch some. And I'm like,
yeah.
I need to keep myself interested here. It's like, oh, it's just like, so American.
I need to keep my eyes open for basketball.
It's so American, isn't it? It's like, oh.
Anyway. Like, now it's more European, but I don't think there's any British players on the NBA. It's just like Eastern European players. You know,
isn't like the NBA like 90% American anyway, like the roster.
Yeah. Like I would even say 80%, because like Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, I can only name like a handful, but like there's a lot of non-Americans on it. In fact, the All-Star weekend used to be America versus the world. So like they would get American players versus around the world players, like Joel Embiid from Cameroon. And of course, the new guy, Victor Wembanyama, is from France. But I don't think there's any British players.
Don't think there's anyone I could actually ever name, like even like it being put in the spotlight.
They're probably in their contract, like, well, is there any tea in the NBA? It's like, no, there's not. Like, bloody hell, no, I'm not doing this. No.
I don't blame them, but yeah. It's been a long February, and this should come out at the end of February as well, so we've made it through somehow first 2 months of 2024. It's been a little bit here and there, but as I said, we're here, StrangeCast. If you are new here, as always, we do please ask if you can like the video, share the video, subscribe to the channel, help us promote the channel, keep up to date with the content as well. It helps you keep up to date with everything we're talking about. We're close to 1,100 subscribers on YouTube, so if you can subscribe and you haven't subscribed, that'd be great. And also, as well, StrangeCast is available on all podcast services, so it's available on Spotify with a video version, Apple Podcasts, everything. And what? See? I knew I was meant to do something before I did that.
Oh.
Do not disturb mode comes on there. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
But yes, StrangeCast is available on all podcast services. And if you are listening on podcast services, come over to the YouTube channel because you can watch the video version here if you want. And thank you as well. We have now crossed 6,000 plays across all podcast episodes on those services. And we're at 170 plus followers on Spotify, which is great. So thank you again. And if you are on there as well, do rate us as well. And also on Apple Podcasts as well, please rate us as well. We do really much appreciate it. Adam. Right. So
that's my name.
It's just... Yeah, I think the industry has died. Like, Deck Nine has just disappeared off the face of the earth. Like, the tweet occasionally has been no news. I can't actually remember the last time we covered a Deck Nine topic. It must have been The Expanse and some kind of variation of that news. But they are not existing at this point. And it's very quiet on almost every other news front as well. So we only have very free news pieces, and they're very small anyway. And then we obviously got a really interesting main topic, at least for that. So should we kick off with our first piece of news?
I'm so down for this topic.
I am as well. And this also sums up Square Enix as well. It's such a random thing to throw out there. It's a great idea as well. I'm not like dissing on Square Enix, but it's just like it was out of nowhere and it's random. So the Life is Strange Twitter account on the 13th of February tweeted, in the LA area, Sunscoops are offering two Life is Strange themed flavors, Are You Cereal and Cotton Candy Chaos Fairy, until February 25th. Elsewhere, find a limited edition hoodie and keychain at Square Enix's, I think that's their store. So that was like a tweet, and they've put pictures there. It's really cool. And it's like, but it's also Square Enix and Life is Strange. You know when they did the Thanksgiving thing, it's like, oh yeah, Life is Strange has hit 20 million plus players overall. And it's like, they just randomly drop like random things. And it's like, why weren't you doing this when the games were coming out? Why weren't you like actively like promoting these events? Because this is sweet, man. It looks so cool as well.
No pun intended, because it's ice cream. When you sent me this, first of all, do you notice the spoons have like the little Polaroids on top of the spoons?
Big fun.
Yeah, that's great. But like, what's getting me is just like, okay, Square, like, are we still here? Or, like, what's up? You know, it's kind of like, I feel like Square and Life is Strange is just kind of like an on and again, off again relationship. It's like kind of like, what are we? And it's like Square is like, I don't know, dude. It's like Life is Strange fans like, are we like are we like good? Are we? Square's like, I don't know. You haven't got me roses in a while. It's like, what do you want, dude? Just make a game. Just like make a game, or like at least they kind of acknowledged it with Life is Strange Arcadia Bay Collection, and then it recognized with like Ice Cream, and they recognize that Max and Chloe are the thing. What are we doing, dude? I don't know. It's just kind of like, it's cool. But at the same time, it's kind of like, okay, do you want the Life is Strange property or not? Like, it gets so weird, man.
Yeah, it is a truly on and off relationship, isn't it? It feels like that. I have a weird feeling.
By the way, someone tagged Emma Vicelli to see this tweet. So I just see that. I don't think Emma Vicelli replied, but someone tagged her.
She's very active usually, but yeah, it's quite cool though. Like the actual, I have a weird feeling though of Fury as well, because you kind of like put it in my head last year a little bit where you said like we could see Life is Strange game come this year, and it's like
yeah,
it's quite weird that they're active again, just like with these little bits and stuff. I'm like, you know, maybe is Life is Strange Aperture coming? Like, yeah, is that like, you know, on the way here? It's like those that have a weird, as you said, it's a weird relationship with like Square and Life is Strange. It seems like, yeah, we'll promote it. We love this. Oh, Daniel and Sean still exist. Just a reminder. We love that as well.
Yeah, it's just like talk about the middle child syndrome. Life is Strange too. It's just like they are the middle child of the Life is Strange series, dude. And I'm married to a middle child. And my mother is a middle child. So like, I'm an only child, so I'm king. But like, it just feels like Life is Strange too. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, we see you. Good little guy. And just fuck her off. But yeah, this one is just kind of like, I see these promotions. By the way, I haven't read the comic series yet, the new one that dropped. I haven't read anything yet. But they just keep promoting it and yet like forgetting it at the same time. It's just like Life is Strange is an afterthought, but then stuff like this happens where they're just like, they actually went out of the way and worked with an ice cream shop and made hoodies, and just like, are they a second thought? Because this takes a lot of promotional work. This doesn't say like, hey, make ice cream. Like, there's actual like deals made. So it's like, are they an afterthought or not? Like make up your mind. Sell it to Embracer. I don't want it to be sold to Embracer, but it's like, do something with it. Like, I don't know. Sell it to Xbox. Yeah. It's like, they're looking for more. I think they got money in their pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool because we're not even like thinking, it's just like, because like some of the stuff is really cool, like the keychain looks cool as well, and the hoodie's quite nice, and even the ice cream looks quite fucking like delicious. Like, I would love to have like a go on that, and as you said, like the spoons with little stickers on it is well sweet, but it's like
the hoodie is only $50, dude. Like, it's actually it's not a bad price, by the way. It's still on their website. It is on Sunscoop's website. It's not Square Enix website.
Oh, is it not? I didn't click on the link actually.
Yeah, click that link. And you're on Sunscoop's. Like, this isn't Square Enix.
Oh, Sunscoop's have a website. No.
Yeah. Wait. Okay. So
$10 is not too bad for a keychain.
Yeah. I'm trying to look at like, is Sunscoop's like, it says manga right here. So there's a Sunscoop's manga. What the heck? That's amazing.
I wonder who drew the Max and Chloe. I didn't tell you here.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm just like, who is the artist behind
that
this?
That definitely doesn't look like Emma's stuff. Emma has a very distinct way of drawing noses.
This is an interesting sentence on the hoodie. So on that bottom paragraph of the hoodie, due to licensing restrictions, this item can only be shipped within the United States.
You know the eagle music?
But isn't that's kind of weird, right? That like, they say specifically due to licensing restrictions, this can only be shipped in the United States.
Maybe, you know? Because Sunscoops is an American company.
Maybe, but it's licensing will refer to Life is Strange, you know? Like,
yeah, that's quite interesting, actually.
Because, like, they say licensing specifically. So, but, like, Square is a Japanese company.
Mm. Yeah, that's quite interesting.
But Deck Nine is an American company. So what this means is that we're going to get a new Max and Chloe game from Deck Nine. We're confirmed through Hoodie. No, I don't think that means anything. I just think that's interesting that, like, they say specifically, usually they'll just say, like, can only ship within the United States, but they say specifically due to licensing restrictions. So, yeah,
same with the keychain as well. It says the exact same thing. Due to licensing restrictions, this item can only be shipped within the United States.
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
Interesting.
Yeah. Again, I don't think that really means anything significant. I just find it interesting that they actually say that.
It's an interesting observation to make, to be honest. I'm quite surprised at that. I was tempted to get that keychain, actually, but that's now been left out of my realm
now
as well.
You gotta come to the United States. At least there's something here that's worthwhile.
The promotion expires soon, though, doesn't it? Oh, you can order it off the website, can't you? Yeah, I just go to a hotel so I can order it there and send it to my hotel.
Just
and
sit
I get back
in the
plane.
Hotel. I'm waiting for the hoodie.
I can't even get the ice cream either because it's at the office ended, so I just have to go to a hotel.
Yeah.
Wait for my order to arrive and then go home after it.
My God.
It is. By the way, which ice cream would you take? Because it didn't tell you which one's which, but which
flavors
are they? Are you cereal and cotton candy chaos fairy? So I imagine cotton candy chaos fairy is the one on the right because it's got the artwork.
Yeah.
And well, the first one's ice cereal.
I'll let you guess which one I'm going for.
For some reason, you strike me as the pinkish one.
Yeah, I would go for that one. Yeah, straight up. Why would you say that?
I don't know what it was.
Have you seen me in a Home Depot? I'm so manly, dude.
I would go for blue.
Yeah, I'm just not a big fan of cotton candy, and usually the cotton candy is blue in America. I don't know why.
It was quite cool though. Oh
yeah,
I wish
I would go for the cereal, but like the pink one is striking to me. I like the pink.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, it's a cool promotion. I do you know what as well? I wish they did like in other stores, like in different countries where it's like, you know, the London had one, it had like a pop up shop or something, same with other areas, but it seems obviously business specific and you know, nonetheless, it's quite cool though to see Max in the window.
Yeah.
With the promotion. That's quite cool. But yeah, very random thing to do, but actually quite like it as well. Square Enix, the on and off relationship is back again in full effect for 2024.
It's so odd, yeah. But like, you know, good on them. Don't think I'll be getting the hoodie, but it's just interesting, you know.
Yeah.
But like $50 isn't bad for a promotional hoodie. I was expecting like $65, $70 or something like that. But
yeah,
$50 is pretty standard.
Especially for Life is Strange memorabilia and like merchandise as well. You're not necessarily going to get it every day. But again, just a little bit, the alarm bells going off in my head, thinking that maybe we see something more Life is Strange related. There just seems to be a bit active with it. And I'm like, yeah, maybe this is the sign that Aperture is coming. Who knows?
Yeah. Maybe.
Honestly, if that game exists, I'm not doing this podcast anymore. I've like brained it, put myself on humiliation so many times. Like, there's so many comments in that video. And fair enough as well, respect for leaving the comments as well to people and giving us your feedback. But I'm like so convinced it sounds so stupid.
Weird that why are they promoting Max and Chloe so heavily, dude?
Oh, no, I don't.
And then this gets out and it's just like, I don't know, man. It just, if it does come out, Max and Chloe, I would feel the worst for Michelle because like that is now officially like your creation in the hands of somebody else. Like, it's not even just the universe that you created, it is literally your creation in the hands of someone else.
Because
like,
you can get away with the prequels, can't you? It's like a little bit more
Exactly.
But like a direct continuation of a story that technically doesn't have another story. It's like,
it's
difficult because we do that in the comics, but it's like almost a spin-off, and it's like that is just a alternative universe you have, and it doesn't necessarily like the way that the Aperture rumor and claim being made, it's like a direct continuation of that Don't Nod story. It's like, I don't know if I feel right about that. It's like,
it's just weird, man.
It's like too much time has passed, man. It'd be wild if it happened. I'd be like, oh my God. But yeah, I wouldn't be able to bring myself to be, you'd have to find a new co-host. replacement on his. Like, I can't remember myself too. I'd be like, oh no. No.
I know.
Anyway, should we move on to our next piece of news?
Yeah, I'm actually interested in this one.
Yeah, so as I said, I thought that was really cool anyway, but like just to, you know, bring that as the news. But the next piece of news is, which is, yeah, as you said, quite interesting. So this is actually credit to Life is Strange Reddit that's popped this up. So it says a new version of Series 1 and BTS for iOS has been released. So according to the release notes, support added for newer versions, newer OS versions and device models, various fixes and optimizations for newer devices and social media integrations have been removed.
Yeah.
I can confirm this does not fix issue of not being able to exit the journal edit. It also appears to introduce episode 5 lip sync bug during the conversation with Warren. This is from Reddit user Redbird 9346. So funnily enough, not on my bingo card for an iOS update on Life is Strange. I thought we'd get more one for the Arcadia Bay collection or the remastered collection, but we're actually currently not got one there yet.
Which have is you ever played wild. These? No, not I am not a mobile gamer.
So I have actually played the first season and actually reviewed it as well. One of the very
on iOS.
People. Yes.
Wow, yes. That's weird.
I think I might be one of the two people that's ever actually put an official review out for this.
Keep in mind, I'm an Android boy, so yeah, I know.
I'm sure it's released. Is it on release on Android devices?
It is on Android, but it says specifically for iOS.
Yeah, iOS, yes. So. But I actually, yeah. I'm one of the very, if you ever look it up for Life is Strange 1 on Google for review, iOS version, I have actually reviewed this. And it was provided by Square Enix at the time. They liked me then. I'm not saying they like me now, but we like to tease Square here. But yes, I reviewed season 1 of Life is Strange, or season 1, the first Life is Strange on iOS devices. Very interesting experience to be played on
there
iOS.
There it is, episodes 1 through 3. By Edna Reyes.
Yeah, it was released as that as well. That was the kind of thing. I think it was like episode 1 to 3 they gave us the code for, and then 4 to 5 came later or something. It was a bit strange.
That's weird.
It's just
a bunch of paragraphs talking about crimpets and tea crumpets. And cricket. Like it's only talking about what is this word? Push and oh, it's just a bunch of British lingo. Like, I can't understand this.
Yes, for American website, ironically. yeah, it was quite an interesting experience. I played on my iPad.
Editor's notes. Surreal. Hardcore Gamer has decided to review iOS Life is Strange. It's worth mentioning the review will not look upon certain aspects. Cool. There are some people that would have loved Harley. Yeah, so you gave it. Is there a number score down here?
It should be.
Oh, you gave it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, it was good actually.
Yeah.
So there was quite a nice feature in there where it's like a photo mode they built into it on the iOS version, so you could basically like, take photos whilst you're playing it. It was quite a nice integration feature. It had social media integration, obviously, which has now been removed for different reasons.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, it's probably because of, do you remember the Elon stuff with like Twitter or X and stuff? Like PlayStation removed support for it from their store.
Oh yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
I think, I don't know if about Xbox at the minute, it just seems to be like an issue, which is a bit of a shame because like I always used to enjoy the share button on the PlayStation, even though it's a start button, not a share button, because I've grown up with games. Yeah. But no, it's quite cool that they're still updating, but then also as well causing issues. I just love this part where it says it also appears to introduce an episode 5 lip sync bug during the conversation with Warren. It's oh gosh, right, there we go, let's patch this. But yeah, quite crazy that they're still patching that and like adding stuff to it. But I remember playing the first 3 episodes. I had no issue with it. I think off the top of my head on Life is Strange 1, and I think the frame rate was a little bit slow at times, and I'm playing on like an iPad. This is an iPad Pro as well, when I was playing on it, brand new at the time. But yeah, quite cool experience. But I think like in itself as well, Life is Strange on iOS is kind of like, feels like a distant memory, because that now you just get it on Switch. It feels like that's like the portable option.
Well, kind of, because yeah. As we established with Life is Strange 2D, they said that it's not working for them. For me, I haven't picked up on my Switch again yet, but I just remember not having that many issues. But again, Life is Strange 2D had mentioned that. No, god awful on Switch. So I was like, okay.
It's hard though as well, isn't it? Because do you remember when we were playing Life is Strange Remastered Collection and we were both experiencing different things?
Yeah, exactly. You were having more bugs than I was, and I was like, oh my god.
There was so many freaking bugs.
Then I encountered bugs in around like episode 3. I was like, okay, geez.
Oh, there were like so many like little finches.
You published this review December 20th, 2017.
Oh, God, it feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's, you know, everything feels like a distant memory now. I feel like, mm-hmm. like even yesterday feels like a distant memory. You know? I mean, it feels like just one thing after another. But no, I thought I'd bring it this in as well. And just, you know, we do cover Life is Strange news, so it's worth mentioning. Adam, anything else?
Yeah, it's just kind of, it is odd. Social media integrations have been removed. It might be because of that whole Elon thing, but
yeah,
it's again, going back to where we're hitting a theme so far in these news pieces that, there's a Max and Chloe ice cream that's being promoted through Square. They are updating Life is Strange on iOS, like the original. So it's just like, okay, what's that about? It's like, are we upping promotion here? I'm excited to see what the next news piece is. Like, I bet it's something cool.
Indeed it is. So it's our final piece of news as well.
It has something to do with Life is Strange again. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it isn't. It's our final piece of news, and it's just a segue, which is also including that Banishers Ghost in New Eden has come out since our last episode. And it's got some interesting review scores and some good review scores. So I've just got a tweet here off here. So some of the review scores were IGN gave it a 7 out of 10. GameSpot gave it a 7 out of 10. GamesRadar give it a 3 out of 5. GameRant give it a 4.5 out of 5. PC Gamers give it a 74 out of 100. The Gamer gave it a 3 out of 5. RPG Fan gave it 85 out of 100. Game Reactor UK gave it 8.5 out of 10. And TechRadar gave it 4 out of 5, among many other scores, which I think is a very solid game for them, at least overall.
So I have not played it. In fact, I haven't touched a single video game all this week. I maybe played an hour of like NBA 2K just to touch a game. It's like anything. But yeah, I haven't touched video games at all this week entirely, which is a shame.
Opposite to me, that's surprising.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, so I finished off Yakuza 4 and I played the Final Fantasy 7 Part 2 demo, because that is out next week and you will not be seeing me. I'll be gone. Don't tag me about Lost Records. Don't tag me about Life is Strange. I ain't replying. I'm gonna be gone for days, weeks until the next episode.
I know. I gotta pick it back up, but like I haven't even purchased Banishers yet. But I'm excited. It's not that I'm against it. I'm seeing these scores, and I've been wanting this type of game. Not only just this, but what the review scores are. Because when I see a 7 out of 10 game or an 8 out of 10 game, I'm like, that's a game I want. I want just a solid game. Because what a 7 or an 8 tells me, right? Or even a 3 or a 4 on, like, you know, out of 5. Mm-hmm. What that tells me is that, like, this is just universally a solid game.
Yeah.
When it says, like, a 9 out of 10 or a 10 out of 10, what that tells me is that, like, oh, you're in for, like, the social media hype. You're in for it. I'm not saying like, oh, they were paid off to give it a 10 out of 10, but just like, it's such like
expectations.
The expectations are just like, oh, this is the perfect game. Like Elden Ring. I didn't really vibe with Elden Ring. But like when a game is a 7 or an 8, I'm like, okay, universally, like everybody's like saying like, it's a solid experience. It's good. That's what I want, dude. You send me a 7 or an 8, I'm all over that thing, man. You know what I mean?
By the way,
that makes sense.
And also, has Elden Ring just released an expansion?
They released a trailer for it. I don't think it's out yet.
I was going to say, that's why we've not heard from Michelle and Luke. They've just disappeared in the hype of Elden Ring. They played.
I know.
But no, I agree with what you're saying, though, the expectation thing. I completely understand that, because like, you just want something solid. 7 out of 10. I remember when people like used to get angry about it. I'm like, that's a solid score for a game.
That's what
like,
I mean. I love solid games, dude. Like, like sevens or eights. Let's go, dude.
Yeah.
It's not to say that Elden Ring is bad. It's just kind of like, when I hear all that, I'm just like, oh, the expectations, it's a perfect game. And I do want to jump back into Elden Ring and just kind of like, it just wasn't my game. Versus, I really, really, really got into Dave the Diver.
Dave the Diver. I love that name.
Oh, dude, it's such a good game. And okay, so that game is overall it's a 8 or a 9. Well, it's mostly a 9. It's a 9 out of 10 game. But like, if you showed me like it's a 9 out of 10, I'm like, okay, this better be high. But I went into it super blind and I loved it.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is that like, it seems that Banishers is universally like a good game.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to jump into it, but like I will purchase it when I feel like I have the time to like really dive into it. But I do enjoy that like we have a solid game out of Donut. This is a good game. It almost feels like Vampyr all over again.
You know? Which is good for them as well. Like as a kind of a nice collaboration with Focus as well. So I'm happy with that. Something I will play myself, but I'm keen on like getting to Final Fantasy, which will consume my life, and then obviously later this year Lost Records will do that, and then other games. And I really want to play Twin Mirror. That's just, I don't know what it is. I really want to play Twin Mirror for some reason. It's in my head.
I enjoyed Twin Mirror. I don't think you like set your expectations low because it is a very short game.
Yeah.
But like you can play in an afternoon. I think it's only like 5 or 6 hours. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I like Twin Mirror. I don't recommend it, but like I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's what I'm interested in. Like I've got like a couple of games on my radar which I'm gonna try and cruise through for the next couple of months in 2024. But and Banishers I will probably wait later on down the line because it's something that I will want to play. But I'm happy that Donut has got very positive, solid scores from it. And same with Jusant as well, because Jusant only came out a couple of months before this as well. So it's like they've had kind of like a nice two of their games in the pipeline have come out.
I haven't beaten it yet. I should.
You haven't finished Jusant yet? No, no.
No, I just haven't touched it. But what I play with it, I played an hour or two of it, and I really liked it. I really did like the dynamics. And again, we're talking about Harmony. Harmony was a good game. Harmony was a great game. And then we have Jusant. Jusant was a solid game, and now it seems like Banishers. Banishers is a solid game. So like,
you know, Jusant needs to be on Switch. Is it on Switch? Is it on Switch?
It's not on Switch. That's why I was.
You would have finished it by now if it was on Switch.
I would have. If it was on Switch, I probably would have finished it. But like. I don't know, like, and it should be on Switch. I don't know why it's not. But
they have
like,
plenty of time to release it on Switch as well. Switch 2 ain't coming out until 2025 now, so plenty of time.
That's so the rumors. That's like, I am not expecting a Switch 2 until like they until Nintendo says it. But everyone's like, oh, it's delayed. I'm like, says who? Nobody's saying this except for you. It's just like. I don't know.
The thing is that Nintendo's just not going to come out and say it. They're going to be like, nah, we'll just leave it. It's like, by the time it gets like late 2024, they'll be like, yeah, it's come out 2025. It's like, oh,
exactly.
You told us this like early this year and just like set our expectations for it, but nah.
So
but no, Jusant looks like the kind of game that just looks like it would be divine.
Yeah, it would
Switch,
be great on Switch, but you know, it's not. And I will beat it because it's only 4 hours. But yeah, no, I'm very, very interested in Banishers. Once I feel like okay, I can really sit down and just like enjoy this, I will purchase it. But
yeah,
I'm excited to play. I just haven't had much time lately.
Yes, time is very difficult. It just seems to be lost. It's just like, I just don't have the time. Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, that's our piece of news. And if you have played Banishers, let us know in the comments. It'll be interesting to see what you think of it. Adam, main topic.
Yes.
Yes. So as I said, we didn't have much news, so we go straight into our meaty main topic. Long time coming this. I don't think we've ever spoken about it. I just said to Adam, I was like, which Life is Strange game has the best music? And genuinely, like, just a discussion about the composers as well. So it's like,
here's the thing, though, about this topic. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a lot of them, but I think me and you have the same answer.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think we do. And I don't know how to say it without us spoiling which one we think is the best one. Should we go like one,
go,
two, three, and then say it?
Drop it. Drop the bomb.
Life is Strange 1.
Oh, actually, really?
Yeah.
The better soundtrack?
I think so. I do.
I did not think that.
Oh, really?
Maybe we should have done one. Maybe we should have done your 1, 2, 3.
Oh, damn it.
I thought mine was Before the Storm.
Oh, we're on opposite ends. I thought,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure you thought for me it was BTS, and I'm pretty sure for you it was Life is Strange 1. So this is interesting. Yeah,
that's quite.
I own the vinyl for BTS. BTS is probably one of my favorite. It's probably tied with Life is Strange 1 for me. But overall, I think Life is Strange 1 had the better music. But what is your argument for BTS?
So, like, I really enjoyed Life is Strange 1. So, like, Jonathan Morelli, like, my introduction is for Jonathan Morelli, and Sid Barrett's is through Life is Strange, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I said this in one of my reviews that I did a while back for the first season of Life is Strange, or Life is Strange 1. I said that I enjoyed, like, when they had all these licensed tracks in it, because obviously iconic, like, you know, Obstacles, etc. We've, like, all enjoyed them now. But I always felt like sometimes with Life is Strange 1, it relied heavily on licensed tracks over composition from Jonathan Morelli, because it's like obviously iconic, the main menu theme, the dun, 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 dun. It's like this is so great, and there's so many like beats I hit home. But there was like sometimes it was like even the montage, love the ending of episode one with Obstacles and stuff, but it'd be like a repeat of like certain songs that would be played, and I felt like you could basically just have a bit more in terms of natural creation from a composer music. But on that as well, I think music from Before the Storm, the album that Daughter had made for Life is Strange, the music that is composed for Life is Strange, I think it's arguably one of the best soundtracks that has ever been made in a video game. I just think it's seminal. I think like there was something about Daughter and bringing them in as composers, and because of how beautifully harrowing Before the Storm is, it's that kind of story. It's truly like a beautifully harrowing story, because you follow like Chloe, the kind of like the, you know, the issues that she has with her father, the introduction of Rachel Amber, who's like an enigma, who's like this kind of mystery. It all kind of like all these like different themes incorporate into what Before the Storm's music is. So you have like really, really powerful tracks that accompany it. And then obviously you have a very harrowing kind of like vocal voice from Daughter's lead front woman. And it's just, there's something about it that just clicks for me. I think like it's just arguably like the most powerful in the experience. And I think it's just more so because the way that Deck Nine handle Life is Strange Before Storm, and how Before Storm is set up anyway as a story, the reliance is on Daughter's original soundtrack. So it's on the original music rather than what Life is Strange 1 is, which is like a kind of like a homage to all these different films, TV shows, Twin Peaks, etc., and also a homage to the composer and all these different soundtracks and like licensed tracks. But it's like it's more heavy on licensed tracks than what BTS offers, if you catch my drift.
I do. And that's where my argument comes in. It's just like, I think that Life is Strange 1 had a great mix of both original and licensed. Well, I think that Before the Storm had a great, great composition. Like, God, like it was, again, it moved you. Like, I think the difference between Life is Strange 1's, let's talk about original, right? Original soundtracks. We're not talking about licensed. But when we're talking about original, Life is Strange 1's original soundtrack really kind of set the pace, right? And just kind of like set the pace of the mood. Whereas Before the Storm really pushed you. Like, it didn't pace you, it pushed you. It gave you momentum on emotions, right? Because it did build up. And I listen to the vinyl very often. Like, it's like one of my go-to vinyls is the Daughter's BTS. Like, so I do play that a lot because it does like really embark emotion. The reason why I think that Life is Strange 1 is the better for me personally, like subjectively speaking here, I think because it is a good mix of both original music and licensed tracks.
Yeah.
Right. Because the licensed tracks, just like, because, you know, Max has the earbuds, which I miss, dude. I miss that vibe so much of just getting your separate device for music and putting in a physical head jack and then putting it in. You're not hearing notifications from like Twitter or anything like that, because it is a device that is solely made for music. Bro, I remember walking to school and just being devastated that my iPod was out of batteries. Like, I was just like, no. Because, like, now I can't listen to music, dude. And I miss that feeling. I miss that devastation of just, like, I didn't charge my iPod.
All that devastation of where you put the wire in and you have to, like, twist it because the music's, like,
exactly. And one of the headphones is kind of, bend the wire a little bit. It's just, like, I miss that, like, I miss that, dude. And it's, like, I think that, like, that's why I enjoy it, because you get those soft-spoken licensed tracks, right? From, like, great artists, dude. Absolutely phenomenal artists. But then you have an original soundtrack from Sid Meier's, or Sid Matters, Sorry, Sid Meier's. I'm Jonathan thinking of the video game. Yeah, Jonathan Morelli, but I'm thinking of Sid Meier's, the video game.
Sid Meier's.
But yeah, Jonathan Morelli, who just does like a pace of where you should be going. And it's just like accompanying the scenes rather than pushing the scenes. And this is all subjective because I think BTS, where it pushes you and gives you that emotion through the music, I think that's great too. And I think that's your job as a musician to really envelop that emotion. But that's why I like Life is Strange, because you're going at your own pace, whereas BTS is all about like understanding Chloe's emotions. Does that make sense?
No, I get what you mean. There's a balance with it as well, as you said, because like that moment, for example, with Max, when you said she puts her headphones in the very like early part of the first episode and she's listening to music. That's kind of like an experience most people will have probably felt in high school, a little bit like, you know, the outcast kind of like, I want to get away from all the noise. I can tune into music, adds that kind of feeling about it. So you wouldn't be able to put natural soundtrack, like a natural sound in the background. It'd have to be licensed tracks. So yeah, like I think what they do well with the first game, Life is Strange, and from Don't Nod and also Jonathan Morelli and Sid Meier's, is that you basically have a nice selection of songs and you balance it out with the composition. So it's like there's a right balance of it. I also would argue as well, like, for example, even though I love the ending of the first episode, it has the obstacles playing in the background, I would love to have had like a natural composition instead, even though it might have like been a little bit out of like left field, but just a natural composition, because obviously Sid Meier's is very talented, Jonathan Morelli is really talented. I'd love to have just then made something like that. So can you see where, for example, where it's like Life is Strange Before the Storm, you had like Daughter's song Numbers that plays in the background of the trailer for that they revealed it on. But then they also have like Daughter creating this like original song. So it's not necessarily that other songs from that other album. They create these natural composing songs that just suit Before the Storm instead.
Yes.
For more of its like harrowing moments, rather than just picking a track from somewhere and be like, this accompanies it. But obviously, again, I understand the different vibes from it. It's just like, because I'm looking at it now on Google as well. Life is Strange 1 soundtrack is 22 tracks, according to Google. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 original compositions from Jonathan Morelli. And the rest are all licensed tracks as well. So obviously Obstacles, Spanish Sahara.
So about Sense of a 40-60 split, yeah.
Yeah, so I just wish they would have like a little bit 60-40 to Jonathan Morelli instead.
Yeah.
He's obviously a great composer. And you, you know yourself in terms of like making music and stuff. I just wanted more Jonathan Morelli because he's like just naturally great for that. For example, like we haven't talked about, but we'll come on to like Life is Strange 2 and True Colors. Like, his soundtrack changes obviously drastically for Life is Strange 2. Then I'm like, ooh,
yeah,
it's quite interesting to see who he is as a composer and the way that he actually composes music. It's a tough one, and I get it as well, because like my Universal one is always like, oh, Jonathan Morelli's great. Life is Strange 1 is great. Like, it has to be. When the Daughter came about, I was like, damn. I was like, you can criticize Deck Nine all you want, but I'm like, I will never have anyone slander that soundtrack or say anything about it. I'm like, that is like if you were going to keep, if you're going to create a Life is Strange DNA and say, oh, the music has to be exceptional. It has to have a great composer. It has to have great people on it. I'm like, they picked a T there with like Daughter, and it was like so spot on with it. But no, I think generally they're speaking that. So here's another thing as well. Because again, I do like it as well. Obstacles plays at the end of episode 5, depending on the ending you pick. So for example, when Max and Chloe drive off because they destroy Arcadia Bay, as you should anyway. I'm like, it's like Obstacles again. And again, it suits it. It's really nice. But then I'm like, there was just, just give Morelli the kind of, him score something. Because I imagine he'd make even something more beautifully harrowing. Because like that, for example, that would be like a Daughter moment for me. Because beautifully harrowing moment, because you have that moment where Max is in the car, got a little bit of head down, she knows the repercussions of what's happened, etc. You have that moment where Chloe just puts her hand on it, and then she looks at Chloe, and they drive off. And like there's so many like moments where you can make quite like a harrowing soundtrack, or a little bit more like harrowing, and then bleeds into like a positive mood or positive tone. So like that's my only thing with Life is Strange 1, where I felt like for what they had, it's if you're going to do a 60-40 balance on licensed tracks over original sound, they handled it well.
Yeah.
I just wish, because of who he is, Jonathan Morelli, and like Sid Meier's and all that other stuff, they could have created a little bit more with this original soundtrack. But I get it, Life is Strange. It's a homage to like loads of different things as well. So that's why I had all those songs.
Why didn't you pick Life is Strange 2 as your favorite?
Oh, it's the goat. Oh, we love Life is Strange 2.
Yeah.
So Life is Strange 2 is a diff. I think Life is Strange 2 is the most interesting soundtrack slash sounds compared to any other entry in the series.
Yeah.
Because like it basically kind of like throws the rule book out the window in terms of like the way they did all the other songs in like Life is Strange 1, for example. And again, do you know what as well? Here's my argument as well. I think they more betterly handle a balance with certain music because the game's different. So it has to rely on like moments of silence. It has to rely more on the powerful range of the acting because you have this very much a brother dynamic in the game. But they also have some great music as well in there. So one of them is obviously First Aid Kit's song, I Found a Way, which I completely messed up in the last episode because I couldn't remember the song name. Because we were talking about episode 2 rules, which is the best episode of all time.
Of all time.
Of all time now. That's what it is. It's all time. And like that is such a great introduction to a song. And it's like that, for example, felt very Life is Strange 1-y in a Life is Strange 2 game.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed that. But then what I like more about what they did with Life is Strange 2, it's like you have these licensed tracks that can appear and they kind of like fizzle in and out, but then it's not overly reliant on it. So for example, I'm looking at it here on the Life is Strange Wikipedia page. Thank you, Life is Strange Wiki. Episode 5 Wars. There are no licensed tracks in episode 5.
Really?
Yeah. So there are no licensed tracks that appear in episode 5 for this game.
But really?
Yeah. Think about it.
Is that right? Playing? I guess not.
No, yeah. There's nothing there. Because like they have weird. Like moments that step out, like those songs when they play in Life is Strange 2. So for example, episode 2 rules, automatically I think of First Aid Kit. But it's like when you think about episode 5, like think about it, like what actually is there for like music?
That's true.
It's like, it's a really interesting game, Life is Strange 2. In terms of even just music and putting it in with the other games, you're like, hang on a minute. The dynamic it's handling here. Really fascinating. But yeah, it says here there is none. Oh, it's there. So no, it's yes. Yeah, so look, if you go on the wiki page, there's a licensed track section which has like loads of licensed songs in there. But when you scroll down, the original score just increases in each episode.
Weird.
Like, there's so much like original scores that are in there. And it's like it's completely handled differently. There's a site. Wow, there's two discs in here. Why do I not own this? Like, why do I not own this? Like, this is so cool. I think it's one of the more interesting points of like Jonathan Relly's craft. I think it's like the way they handle the game and that. Because it's a different game completely, isn't it? Because as you said, like we think about Life is Strange 1, we think about those scenes, again, going back to the first episode, Max puts the headphones in, listens to music. Is there really a Life is Strange 2 moment that you do that and the setting and the story of it? Not really. You have to you have to have more of those moments, for example, where Sean walks into I don't know what you'd actually call it in America, the finding a Christmas tree place, a market tree place.
Like Christmas tree shop. Like,
yeah, that's the
I don't
one,
even know what they're called. Yeah.
Yeah, so he walks into that and then instead he meets this drifter who's sitting there and then she starts playing the music and it kicks in.
Yes.
And it has to be like more, it feels like more set piece oriented rather than what Life is Strange 1 does, and even BTS. But then also at the same time, then you accompany really powerful acting, a really serious story, a very serious story. And then you have the composer now coming in and being like, I make music this way. And it has to like play in. It's going to be original, heavy based. So Life is Strange 2 is a very interesting one to talk about. I think it's quite the unusual one in this series, but also very good. And also as well, on top of that as well, and because we don't talk about it as much as the True Colors is a very interesting game for soundtrack. Interesting game. I just still
for
don't
soundtrack?
Know. Yeah.
I was going to say like, because that was done by Julia and Angus Stone.
And Julia starts off with.
Yeah, that's a good one too. It's just kind of like, I really do have to replay True Colors again, because like I don't know, that game, it impacted me so hard and then just dropped for me.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is, just like maybe it was your cynicism or cynic
me you. Can't believe you've been playing on me this is horrible.
But like, yeah, you know what I mean? It was just like, I don't know, it just kind of dropped off. I think in comparison's sake, that like it just like dropped off for me. But
yeah.
Yeah, no, I think True Colors had a good soundtrack. Hold on, True Colors. I'm just like looking.
It's quite nice that Angus and Julia Stone did it, considering they're in the first game, like as a licensed track. That's quite exactly. Nice, like things have in the Life is Strange series.
Yeah, I'm just playing. Can you hear that at all?
No.
Or just going through my headphones. Okay, cool.
Thankfully, yeah. I was going to say, like, I'm going to get hit by a copyright strike on YouTube. Well, Adam, what are you doing, man?
Yeah. Like, it's very acoustic. Like, a lot of them are. Like, they're very much based on acoustic songs.
Mm.
But, yeah, Life is Strange True Colors was... I feel like it was the same problem as you had in Life is Strange 1, where just, like, it's very much 60-40.
Yeah,
on license track versus I feel like I don't really remember True Colors is original soundtrack because it was very heavy on license tracks.
License, you know, because like the license works on that on the trailers that they had. So I'm looking at here, Haven by Nova Amor is a really good song that they picked.
Yes,
and then also as well, When You Call by Cyrus Reynolds. Which is yes. Also very out. They were like great use. Like Deck Nine has a really good use of that, by the way. Give them kudos yes. For that. I'm going to give them where it's like they pick good licensed songs to have their trailers for like Life is Strange, which is quite nice. But I agree with you as well, because like even in itself as well, Creep was in the game, remember, as well. It's in a trailer, but it's also in the game as well, where MXM Toon is singing for Alex Chen, even though I'm surprised they didn't go with Erica Mori, but it's like it's an interesting choice that they went there.
So in your case, there are, if you include Haven as like an original soundtrack, which we will, because Nova Amor made it for this game.
It's on the original score, yeah.
So if we count that, so that's 13 tracks versus 34 total. So 13 minus 34, that is 21.
21.
Yeah. So there's 21. Licensed, and then there's 13 original. You know what I mean?
Oh, I don't like the imbalance, man. I think you need to rely more on original scores.
I do believe you have to rely more on original. And this is on the Life is Strange True Colors from Life is Strange's official Spotify, by the way. Yeah. This isn't like a fan-made one. This is like from the official.
I only say that as well because like I won't spoil anything, but it's like I recently finished Yakuza 4. Yeah. And in there as well, there's a moment like when they have like in the Yakuza series, if you play, they have this dynamic battle intro. So it's like before mm-hmm. you start a big boss battle, you have like this massive setup. It has this dynamic graphic that appears. And during one of the boss battles as well, there's a beautiful piano melody that's played just before you like initiate yeah. the fight. Like it hits, they both, these two people hit each other and the dynamic intro graphic appears. And it's like this, dun, 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 dun. And so I'm like, this is so beautiful. Like that just adds for me, it's the experience. And that's why, like, when I said to you that I felt it with, like, with Life is Strange Before the Storm, with, like, Daughter's music coming on. So it's like, do you want Rachel Amber's in her room crying because of what's happened, like, with her father and her mother, and Chloe goes up there, and you have that really beautiful, like, music being played by Daughter in the background. It's like, it adds to the feeling of it. And it's the same with, like, True Colors and Life is Strange 1 and 2, if you want to argue. It's like when their original soundtrack starts playing, it's like, this is really great. Other times, the main like license track will play, and I'm like, yeah. Did it really need to be there? I'm like, you could have easily have like produced something quite seminal. Because as you said, like, for example, there, like Nova Amora is in Life is Strange True Colors. Great song.
Yeah.
It's so like beautiful, like it's played as well, and it fits in the beats of like so many moments.
Yes.
I just wanted to see like that a bit more sometimes. That's why for me, like I have to put, and as much, and just argue as much as I love Life is Strange 1 soundtrack more than anything else, especially with the licensed track and just even the music that Jonathan Morelli creates. I just think for me, if anyone ever said to me, like, what's your top five like video game soundtracks, music from Before the Storm would be in there. And it'd probably be top three, if not even the top. It's just, I listen to that every time I'm on my like runs and stuff. Or like even where I go somewhere, it's in my Apple library. It's such a great soundtrack, and I'm very envious you have the vinyl as well. I can't believe you own that vinyl. It's such, that is like one of the best purchases ever.
One out of 2,000, baby.
Oh man, honestly, if it was like me, if I was in your situation, like choose the dog or choose the vinyl, I'm like, right, boy, you're getting taken down.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh my God.
Vinyl's staying here. Like, that's just like one of those perfect things to have. But yeah, they're quite interesting, the four games, if you're going to include Captain Spirit in Life is Strange 2 and the way that they handle soundtracks. Because, like, always been a fan of, like, when they introduce licensed tracks. So, for example, I believe Dido is in this in True Colors with Thank You. And it's a great moment. Alex puts on the headset and you have this great, you know, this great moment. Creep was an interesting choice. I was always very interested about that being in True Colors. That was an interesting Radiohead track to have and to cover in a Life is Strange game. Never expect that. But generally speaking, they do handle the licensing quite a lot. Well, they handle it really well. But I just sometimes wish, like, when you bring in Angus and Julia Stone, it's like the magic is in their original composition. And that's what I think, why for me it stands out, where it's like with Daughter, they were like, you come in, we don't necessarily want all these songs from your original albums. We'll use like numbers for the trailer, but let's create like your original soundtrack. Let's create your own like distinct music in the Daughter style, and we'll just bleed it into Life is Strange. And it just fits, like, it's like, oh, perfect.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that I think I just like the vibe of the Life is Strange one, but like objectively speaking, in terms of balance between licensed and original, I think BTS nailed it.
Yeah.
I think if I'm objective, I would say BTS, but if I'm in terms of like which vibe do I like better, I think it's Life is Strange one for me for sure.
Yeah, it is a difficult one for me because it's not just outright being Daughter, because as I said, like that vibe from the first Life is Strange is like, it's like, it's always been that Sundance indie style film, you know, spectacular kind of experience that Life is Strange one has. Like, that's always been captured perfectly in the music. They nailed that completely. But it's like, you know, the successor, which was like BTS straight afterwards as well. They bring in Daughter and they create this equally like powerful soundtrack and style and everything else. Like, I've never seen any criticism towards Daughter as well. That's the funny part. Yeah. People criticize BTS, they'll criticize all these other aspects, but it's like, that's the one thing where everyone's like, yeah, actually they nailed that. Like, they really got off the mark. And the same with Life is Strange one as well, obviously with Jonathan Morelli as well. That was a great choice, and him to come back, it's quite interesting. And I think maybe there's like, obviously it'd probably be like the fact that I Don't Know Montreal is just in Canada and they're going to go for like a local musician. The fact that they never went back to Jonathan Morelli for this new game, Lost Records. I want to ask them that. I would love to know why they went with the Nora Kelly band instead of like, because like, imagine as well, Philip Bach came back for this. They're working with Philip Bach again for Lost Records. They're working with Jean-Luc on Lost Records. But then the soundtrack composer that they had for the first two Life is Strange games isn't going to be working on them again on this. And it's like, that's quite an interesting turn. And then to go with Nora Kelly band. I'm quite intrigued to hear one day about that from them, see why they went with that decision. But yeah, really enjoyed Life is Strange music. Seminal.
Yeah. Jonathan Morelli is 43 years old, by the way.
Damn.
Yeah.
You're catching up to him.
I am catching up to him very slowly. My knees are achy. And his knees don't exist.
No, that's just too fast. No, never say that. That hurts that. Can't be doing that. Who's the best composer?
Morelli. I think here's the thing, like my opinion on composition as someone who wants to be a composer. I think that compositions need to be present but not be the front runner. I think they need to be I think they need to be the seasoning for the scene but not the scene of it in of itself, like it's a striking balance depending on the piece. But I think that Morelli really does strike the balance between like setting the tone without being the front and center stage, you know.
No, that's quite a nice way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's my opinion. I'm stupid though.
No, it's an interesting one, just the way that they work soundtracks. Like I always said, like out of all the things you could have in there, Kings of Leon was a very interesting choice, by the way. True Colors.
Yeah, it was.
That.
Yeah.
That was like a little bit. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Yeah. Kings of Leon has an interesting story though, because like. They at least didn't put in like one of their like Sex on Fire or something like that. They actually put in a Yeah, they hate that song, dude. The frontman hates Sex on Fire, dude.
I don't blame them. It's a ridiculous song.
Yeah, he fought for it to like not be released. Like, why would we release this? Like, no, it's going to make millions. And it did. Business people did, but he hates playing it, dude, because it's so stupid. He's like, it means nothing. What do you mean Sex on Fire? So I'm glad that they put in a track that nobody really knows, so they can actually look at to Kings of Leon's backlog, which is great. But yeah, no, True Colors, very, very heavy on the licensing. Yeah. But yeah, I like Morelli's compositions. Yeah,
and just to add on to this as well, I just want to talk about this as well. Listen to it. I think what would be a very interesting licensed track from someone in I don't know which track you'd pick, but would be something from Miley Cyrus in Life is Strange.
Something from Miley Cyrus in the Life is Strange game.
Like, if you're going to pick a licensed track.
Yes.
And you're going to put something in. I think she would be a very interesting choice to pick in there. I think she's one of the most talented musicians like it that I've listened to like last 10 years or so.
You know she's who, like, I would put in?
Who?
Jonathan Panetta. I would put in one of his songs into a Life is Strange track, you know. Castagarden, no, he's garbage. Castagarden is such a garbage musician. I wouldn't put him in it. but yeah, no, Jonathan Panetta. I don't know. But yeah, no, if I was gonna pick like a licensed person to put it in, man, like it's because you gotta get the vibe right, you know, it has to be like an acoustic person. I really like Nova Amor, like his vibe, and he has done a Life is Strange soundtrack, so I would love to hear like a whole original piece like from Novo Amor.
Yeah,
I think he would like absolutely like kill it in terms of a Life is Strange game like original score.
Yeah,
I would love to hear one from Novo Amor.
I even though Miley Cyrus is a little bit wild for it, the one that I would definitely pick and I know would perfectly fit in a Life is Strange game, Hayley Williams, and from her Flower for Vases.
Is there any bias on that choice, or no, like never, no never. No bias on that at
no,
all
completely not no yeah. She would be perfect for Life is Strange game, like her music would be perfect for it, especially her solo stuff as well, not like a Paramore song, but like if you're going to pick one from her self-titled work that she did as well, like the Flowers for Vases, I think it's Keep You Right Here, it's like an unbelievable song. You could just put that and it fit in any Life is Strange game.
You know who I would choose Andrew Bell. Like, now I'm thinking about it, Andrew Bell, I think, would actually kill. Am I thinking of the right guy, first and foremost? I certainly am. Yeah, Andrew Bell, I think, would murder. Like, putting anything from Black Bear, like, anything from that album, Black Bear, like, you would actually, like, really kill it on Life is Strange game. But, yeah, that would be my choice.
Yeah, it's a good choice, though. Do you know who would make a good composer for this game, for the series as well? My boy, Travis Kelce. Featuring Taylor Swift. Because he is the artist behind
the work. He's the artist. He's just behind the booth and just saying, like, sing a C. Sing a fifth C, Taylor.
Exactly.
Just like shouting.
He would hit it hard. It would be the composer, Travis Kelce, featuring Taylor Swift.
My God.
He's my boy. No, I think that there's so much room as well. Like, I think this is like one of the more interesting series where you could basically pick like any musician or composer or someone and they could fit in really well because you have so much like room to kind of mess around with in terms of the style that you want to bring into it. Because like, every Life is Strange is different, isn't it? We just talked about them all being quite like the ones that we like and the ones that are quite different, but they've all got their own distinct stories-ish, distinct stories and then distinct styles. But I'd always, for me, like the dream would be to see Hayley Williams do a Life is Strange soundtrack. It would never happen, but I'd love to see it. I think she's such a talented musician anyway. But like, I think she could easily do it. And especially when she did the solo stuff. So like her Flowers for Vases album and the other one as well, that she did Petals for Armor. It's like, it would be perfect for that style. But I've always been very surprised that Paramore's not been a song or something from them has not been in the game.
Oh, yeah.
In at least one of the games, especially something like Deck Nine. They have some very interesting choices. I also find it interesting, just before we kind of wrap up here, or before we add anything else, the songs you pick as well. I think it tells you a lot about the people you that are making the game. So it's like, considering, like, for example, like like the Don't Nod team, you know, Sid Matters, Jonathan Morelli, French composer. Most people probably didn't even hear of Sid Matters, I would assume, naturally, prior to Life is Strange, then became like quite avid with it. I will be honest, I didn't know about Daughter, really, to be honest. And they're like English, they're a UK band, and they're just kind of like not as big as other people. Then my introduction to Daughter through Deck Nine and like Life is Strange before, so I listened to all their music and I was like, this is so good. But it's like, I just find it quite interesting, like, when you basically make games as developers and you start putting like your influences in it, especially from like films, TV shows you've watched, games, but more so the songs you pick. I think it kind of tells you a lot about what kind of people they are.
Oh yeah. No, it's that's the thing. It's subjective, and I think the beauty about putting a licensed track in, I think what you need to do is like find somebody who knows the music scene and just like develop a music scene. Like, think about the Tony Hawk games. Like, how many pop-punk fans did you find through Tony Hawk games? You know, like, that's how that generation started. They're like, wait, hang on a second. This is a genre of music? And, like, that's how it started, man.
You knew music generation for me if you were part of the MTV era.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that just doesn't exist anymore now. It's like TikTok TV instead, but that era was like unbelievable MTV. Like and even as well, like, funny enough, I saw it with a couple of weeks ago. Did you ever watch Kerrang? Was Kerrang a thing in the US?
Kerrang?
So Kerrang was like a music station in the UK. I don't know if it was UK based, but it was like, it was one of the music channels you could flick through on TV. So you basically have like, you'd have MTV, you'd have like, I think there was a channel called Scuzz. I think it was called Scuzz. It was like a heavy metal one. And Kerrang was your emo pop rock bands. So you basically had like Fall Out Boy.
Spell it.
K-E-R-R-A-N-G.
No, I don't. Yeah, I don't surprised, you know, recognize this at all.
Oh, really? Yeah. I don't know if it was an American thing or not. It was big. It was big. Yeah.
Oh, look at that. It was never they covered Post MTV. Malone. Look at that.
There we go.
Yeah.
It was never as big as MTV was. MTV was like the peak of like those channels, you know, for music. But this was like one of the ones that we used to watch as kids growing up. You'd get all your rock bands and your pop, your emo rock bands and all the other variations of it. Like Yumi and Six and like Bullet for My Valentine and like this thing, like Paramore, they would all appear on it.
Did you know that like, Bullet for My Valentine is touring with Trivium in 2025?
Yes, I did see that. I've seen like a couple of like meme videos where people are like, are you available on January 12th? And like, and they just put the poster up instead of like, live my Valentine. It's like, I feel you.
By the way, on that note, Kerrang on Twitter, right? You know who follows Kerrang on Twitter?
Is it my boy?
Alex Jones.
Alex Jones?
Yeah.
Oh my.
Who you had on the show. Hooray!
There you go.
Yeah, look at that. See, it all comes
Alex
together.
Alex Jones does.
Alex Jones.
Yes. Has good taste in music. But knows, yeah, so knows all about Kerrang.
Yeah, I've never heard about Kerrang ever.
Yeah. Oh, the good times. The good old days.
Yeah.
I feel old. I miss the 90s. Take me back to the early 90s and 2000. It was a great time. Anyway, should we wrap that up there?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay, perfect. So thank you. I hope you enjoyed that. Let us know which soundtracks you think are the best. I think it's a very difficult conversation to be had, which is the best music in a Life is Strange game. Anyway, our other segment, Comment of the Day, or Comment of the Podcast. I don't know how to phrase this. This is from Dream Prism, Adam.
Yes.
And maybe this is a bit biased as well that I picked this.
I think it is.
I know, Alex. Well, I'm gonna read what Dream Prism put here. And he put, I agree with Adnan in suspecting the language choice is intentional and that is not exactly quote unquote for girls / women. End quote. So I think Dream Prison deserves comment of the podcast because I think that was a good pick. And I think I'm very much right about that as well, by the way.
I think you are.
By the way, just on that as well, because I saw some people kind of like, you know, commenting about it as well, because Michelle says in the interview with Eurogamer that we talked about in the last episode about Lost Records, Bloom and Rage, he says they brought in Nina Freeman and Desiree, come on, was it Desiree? Desiree Surfree? I can't. The two writers that they brought in, the two American writers they brought in for the game, and they were talking about like that they bring in to write for teenage girls essentially, and he does say that they're girls, but again, I've also said this as well, he doesn't say all four are girls, just to kind of like until Michelle Coach goes on Twitter or X or Threads or something else and says something. These four are all girls, like
yes.
My theory still stands, and also my theory is mainly based on the fact that I probably think that they're all four girls to start with. I don't think they're all four girls by the time the game gets to the adult stage of it. I think that's the art of what they're creating as well, with in terms of like a time jump. Like who is the same person that they were when they're like, you know, 12 to when they're like, you know, 34 or something. It's like the time jump is 27 years. Like I know people who like I followed or grown up with who are basically now come out as being non-binary or have changed or something else. And that's how I've seen it, you know. I might be completely wrong. I don't know if I've met any people who really identify as non-binary at like 10 or 12 or whatever age is. You can, by the way, just to put that out there. But I think the way that they're going to tell it is the natural story evolution, where it's going to be a girl who transitions into non-binary status, and it'll be a change that comes in their adult years, and you kind of experience that, and it'll probably resonate with a lot of people as well, to be honest, as well, who have gone through that own experience. But
definitely,
again, as I'll argue in 12, until Michelle says there are all four girls, or even Luke,
yes,
nah, this is that deep rabbit hole theory. Like everything is very specific the way they're saying things, you know. That's it.
No, it's definitely it's up in the air until they say it officially. But we don't know anything about this story except for hole on the ground.
By the way, as well, are you surprised they haven't like really put anything else out there yet? I know we're only in February, but this game came out this year as well.
So they say. We shall see.
So the same.
Waiting for Switch 2 to release, and then they can put it on Switch 2.
Or maybe that Elden Ring trailer has consumed them. I think it's consumed Luke and probably Michelle. Yeah. Like we're not going to be seeing them for a while.
So on a survey at GDC, right, the Game Developers Convention, or conference, I think it's conference. But either way, they put out a survey saying like, what game are you developing for? And there was actually, I believe, 20% of people said Switch successor. Like they're really? Actively working on a game for a Switch successor. Yeah. So that's out there in the world that like in the survey, so, like I think it was a low number. It was like 18-20% said that they're working on a game for the Switch successor. Now, I don't know if Luke and Michelle were at that convention or if they took that survey, but I'm just saying. Perhaps. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Oh, I wish they make that game series franchise game as well should definitely be on Switch. It just,
oh yeah.
It seems weird though. Like, do you know when I was talking to Olivier for This Bed We Made, and I said to him, I was like, you know, he even brought up himself about Switch. I was like, it just seems to be like a missed thing that like everyone thinks it's like, oh, this game would be great on Switch. And it looks like it's just a development hurdle. And like, I feel like with like even Don't Nod games, because like look at like as he said about Jusson and even Lost Records, I'm like these games just would be so divine on Switch. It's just Nintendo making weird consoles. It's like it's a great system, the Switch. It's like just make it. The Switch 2 has to be powerful enough to run some of these games. And it might not even do it with Lost Records. Lost Records is going to be on Unreal Engine 5. So it's like, it's, you know, I don't know if it's going to be able to hold. I don't know if Lost Records is going to be able to run on the Switch. It's
we don't
like,
know. We just know that there was a secret back room where they were testing the Switch 2. And they're like, wow, it's super powerful, guys. It's so powerful. It's super, guys. As people were saying, that like, a nice name for the Switch 2 would be the Super Switch. Like the Super Nintendo.
Super Switch.
Super Switch. Oh, my God, no.
Double
please.
S.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's even if you're going to... Would you call it Nintendo Super Switch, or would you shorten it?
I would shorten it to Switch Super Superman Switch. That's what I would call it. I think they really do need to call it Switch 2. Like, if they're going to stick with the name Switch, it needs to be Switch 2.
Here's a great one as well. They called it Switch 2, but it's T-O-O instead of T-W-O.
Let's stick to our day jobs and just...
I am genuinely the missed opportunity in marketing. I would have done that with The Last of Us Part 2. I don't even like The Last of Us Part 2, but I would have called it Last of Us 2. T-O-O, not 2. That would be like... Because also, The Last of Us also, that's what it means. That's what 2 means. So if you're calling it Nintendo Switch 2, it's Nintendo Switch also.
What? No, it just means it's the second entry.
Yeah, but if you use T-O-O, it means also. So it's also saying that Nintendo Switch also.
So let's go on to their next segment.
Look, it's not... Arcadia Bay Collection. Name idea. That was me.
So you're saying that it should be Life is Strange 2, T-O-O.
No, you wouldn't use it for Life is Strange 2 is different, because that's a completely different story. Because it'd work Life is Strange T-O-O if it was Max and Chloe still, and you could carry the story on. But it's not, because it's Sean and Daniel, so it
there's
work.
Rules to your marketing.
Exactly. Greatest episode of all time, rules as well, as you said there.
Episode T-O-O 2. Episode 2.
I would be great in marketing. I really would. The names I would bring up as well, they would be absolutely outstanding. Would they not?
I'm sure of it. I'm positive it would have been you missed your calling.
Like, I did miss my calling.
You know, the universe put you on this earth to put T-O-O instead of T-W-O and to put the U back in colors.
That is a definite one, by the way, as well. By the way, if you want to feel old as well, my brother was telling me that one of his students didn't know what a Game Boy Color is.
Get the fuck out of here. What? Really?
Yeah, I didn't know what a Game Boy Color is. Yeah, my brother was telling about this story, this experience that he had. He was saying when I think of a childhood memory, or if I think of fresh grass, it's about me being a child on my lawn with my Game Boy Color and my friends playing. And one of the kids said, "What's a Game Boy Color?"
Oh my God, dude. Chill. Oh, no. Yeah,
they don't know what a Game Boy Color is, mate. And then he explained it as well. And they're like, "Oh, it's a Nintendo. Is it a Nintendo thing?" And it's like,
"Wow, wow,
yeah,
wow."
We're old people, and I imagine a lot of you also feel old as well. But yes, that is let's call it the end of comment of the podcast. And thank you, Alex, for that as well. I didn't pick the other comment out. We called us out about the Captain Spirit.
I didn't pick that up. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that is
true. I blame you for that. Yeah, I'm gonna blame you for that. But anyway. Spread the arts.
Yes.
You want to go first?
I think you should go first, because mine's going to be interesting.
So, yeah, okay. I think I could guess what it might be about, but, you know, we'll do that. So I actually watched a TV show. I don't know if you guys had it. Did you ever have a show called Gladiators?
We have a show called American Gladiators.
Ah, so it might be based on that. I need to look in the specifics. We also had a UK version called Gladiators.
Yes.
American Gladiators does sound familiar. It might actually be the same show.
It might be the same show, just based off of... Because then why would they call it American Gladiators?
Yeah, so... I think it is.
Oh, look at that. It's a 2024 game show. Look at that.
That's the reboot that I've watched.
Okay. Yeah, this looks exactly like American Gladiators then.
Who was on American Gladiators? Do you remember any of the gladiators?
There was
a guy called Wolf on it.
I don't. I really didn't watch it, because I was like, I saw it and
Where
I was like,
you?
What the? Well, like, because I was like,
all
what,
kinds of
what
TV
the point
in,
of
in
this
as
is?
Kid.
Like, I was. Oh. I had a terrible childhood, so I don't know what to tell you.
I'm gonna double check this now quickly whilst we're on podcast, because I just want to make sure.
Yeah, it's just like the same kind of logoing. So I guess American Gladiators.
Okay. So we had Gladiators, but it's based on American Gladiators.
Oh, what?
So in the 90s. So right, so here's the lowdown. So in the 1990s, there was a TV show called Gladiators here. It was a British TV show. Big, loved it. It's based on your TV show, American Gladiators.
That's so weird that you base it and you just call it not British or English or...
Why would you call it American Gladiators? Why are you calling it
I don't
American
know, you're
Gladiators?
The marketer, you tell
That's
me.
That's That's literally the as we talk about the eagle sound effect, the dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
That's literally, why would you call it American? You just see you call it Gladiators. Everything
I know.
Why, Why would we call gladiators? It gladiators?
I don't know.
But anyway, anyway, you have American Gladiators. We had Gladiators. It was based on your TV show in the 90s, iconic TV show here. They have rebooted that in 2024. So we now have a new show called Gladiators in 2024, because obviously the industry is running out of ideas. We need to reboot everything. We need to remake everything. And that has now debuted in the UK. Very interesting show to just watch as someone who is now my age. Because obviously when you're watching the crowd, all the people are like my age, because it's like millennials with their kids. Dude. So it makes you feel old because you're basically, you know, all the kind of like reference points and these kids are trying to learn it. They stay quite true to the show. So they keep the iconic theme. And it's obviously like the night, from what I remember as well, the 90s as well, it was very camp with like, you know, some of the shows you'd have. That'd be like kind of like a nice undertone, which was really fun that you'd have. And they make it quite, I think they try and keep that, but they amplify it and make it quite extravagant. So it show, one of the things that shows it basically is that the rustic charm of the 1990s can't exist in 2024 because they try and keep the main elements of Gladiator where it's like hyper modernized. So it's like a couple of like a couple of okay tweaks, but like there's just weird editing that they do sometimes and like weird special effects they add, and like they have this like locker room camera which made no sense, but generally speaking the ethos of the show they've kept quite core to the same. I'm kind of just a little bit like, we are so far beyond the 90s now. I feel old when I was watching that. It's like the same magic can't be captured anymore. And it feels like it's quite an indictment of the world that we live in right now. I feel like it's just very hard to create magical moments like that in those kind of TV shows.
So one of the players on that Gladiator show is born in 1991.
Would you look God.
Yeah. Oh my God. And then 87. But yeah, no, by the way, our age.
There's a footballer that plays for one of my teams at the minute.
I saw that. Alex Gray.
Not even Alex Gray. No, no. From Manchester United, my football team, there's a guy in the first team called Kobbie Mainoo. He's 18 years old, Adam. Adam, he's 18 years old.
What?
He is playing in the Manchester United first team at the minute. He's 18 years old, this kid.
Bro,
I'm like, chill. No. He is not born in the 2000s and playing for football. We don't. No. I'm in my 20s. I refuse to admit that we're in our 30s.
I know, because like on the Sixers, we have Tyrese Maxey, who's 23, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so weird.
I'm not having it, man. Not having it, man.
It's weird being on this side. Yeah, like it makes it much more sense that like our fathers were like talking about like, oh, this guy, and it's like they're so much younger, and now I'm in this position where I'm just like, oh, Tyrese Maxey, why are you hitting that? But I'm like, I'm 10 years older than him, so it's like, what am I talking about? I don't know.
Yeah,
it's so weird.
I'm still stuck in the 1990s and we're not having people born in 2000 plus. Like I'm saying this to Adam if you're wondering as well, it's like 4 years from now Gen Alpha is 16 officially, and you want to feel a bit older. Gen Alpha, and then is it Gen Beta? You said it was that comes
Gen
next.
Beta is next. Yeah,
yeah. We got terrible names though. We got the good terrible ones. Names. I like millennials. That's
awful
the nice
marketing. Awful.
Yeah, it's awful. I'm a big fan of Zillennial actually as well.
Yeah,
I thought Zillennial kind of one. Yeah. I don't think Gen Z is as good, but I think Zillennial is quite a nice one. For like Kylie's a Zillennial. She falls in like 97 to 2000. Nice bracket that. But yeah, Gen Alpha and Gen Beta have got some terrible. What's going to happen next? Gen, what's someone with C? Gen Charlie? You need distinct names for them. Well, yeah, it was an interesting show nonetheless. If you want to watch it, it's on BBC iPlayer, which means that you probably have to access it in different parts of the country. And however you're going to get it, I don't know. But if you are in the UK, as I am, and you watched Gladiators growing up, oof, it's a swift blow to your heart. They try and keep the magic. The magic has fizzled, unfortunately.
I will move to England and I will watch that show.
We can go watch Everton play.
That's true. That's true. I could. What is your guess on what I was going to say?
Well, I think there's this guy called Castagarden who's dropped some new music.
Oh,
I thought I was going to invite him on here to like plug his music for Spread the Arts.
I dropped a new song. It's called New Game Plus. Go check it out. It's okay.
Available on Apple Music and Spotify.
Or on Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer, wherever you get your music. No, that's
Deezer's still a thing.
Yeah, apparently my music's going on Deezer, so I'm like, okay, sure. Deezer's still there, man. It's got my music.
Listen to it for Deezer.
I don't know who listens to it. I don't get any like listens off of Deezer. Like I go on DistroKid and I see my stats, and it's just like, dude, who's on Deezer? I'll put it on there. I didn't put my new song on my Bandcamp yet. Probably by the time this episode comes out, it's on Bandcamp. But
yeah, it's definitely on Bandcamp.
I know. I'm on Bandcamp. I just haven't uploaded the new song yet. I just haven't. But yeah, so that's out. New Game Plus. Hooray. No, that's not it.
Wow.
Mine's not really a spread the arts. It's more of a review of something. I binge watched the Avatar Netflix series.
Oh, wow. Now that was a bit of a
left field. Yeah, I didn't even tell you off camera. Like, I was going to tell you. I was like, no, I'm going to give you a surprise. I binge watched it. I watched all 8 episodes. It takes about, each episode is about an hour, so it's about 8 hours. It's not it, man. It's just not it. Like,
shock.
Here's the thing. All of the bad reviews I've seen of this show, I 100% agree with, because nobody's calling this show a disaster. Like, yeah. Nobody's calling this a disaster. It's just more of like, it missed the mark. And yeah. While me and Liz watched it together, and the whole time I kept thinking of just like, this show is done great. The CGI is fine. Like, it's a fine CGI. The casting is pretty good. Like, I'm not going to lie. The casting is good. Some of the acting is kind of stale. It's kind of stiff acting. But at the same time, the casting is great for Sokka, especially. For Ozai, Fire Lord Ozai, phenomenal casting, dude. It's good. Ooh. Here's the thing. It's just kind of like you watch it and you're like, I agree with everything. It's not a disaster. But what it is just more of like, why did we need to do this? Like, why?
I was literally going to ask you that.
Yeah, it's just more of like, why?
Yeah. I was literally, as soon as you were going to finish, I was going to ask you why. Because I'm looking at Wikipedia. First thing I see is Avatar Last Airbender 2005, 2008. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Why are we doing this now?
Why? It's more of it's like, what it felt to me, and I said this to Liz while we were watching it, it's almost like, you know, there's cover songs out there, but this feels like a cover album. Like, it's almost like, yeah, someone said, like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna take the perfect album, which was Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. I'm gonna cover all of Fleetwood Mac's Rumors album, and just like, but I'm gonna do it in my style, and just like, why? It's perfect. Yeah. Like, Avatar the Last Airbender was a perfect show.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that this show is bad, because nobody's saying the show is bad. It's just more of like, it missed the mark, it missed the magic, and also it rushes the story. There's one episode where they cram 3 episodes into one. Like, there's 3 different story arcs into this one. And it just felt to me like, why are we rushing this? Like, you only are limited to 8 episodes. So why do this then? I feel like, like, the last thing I said to Liz, and then I'll take any of your questions that you have for this show. I think what I would fix is that, like, it's obviously that they have a lot of love for the show. But what I think that this show would have done well into, and this would have, oh, this would have been an amazing show. 8 episodes, same directors, same casting directors, I will say.
Yeah.
CGI. But tell a story within that 100 years that Aang was in the ice and there was no Avatar. What does that story look like when there was a world 100 years without an Avatar to protect them? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that would have been an interesting story, and I think they would have done it well, but it just missed the mark. So my review of Avatar The Last Airbender, the Netflix show, is kind of like, if you have 8 hours to waste, go for it, because there's a lot of fan service, but it's just not it. It's just not it.
Because this is a live action, isn't it?
It's live action with CGI. Yeah.
How does that compare to, like, the actual original show, because like that was the charm of it. Like, yeah. I never really, like, even when Disney did the entire like live action production of all of its like classic stories, I was like watching Lion King in live action. I turned it off halfway because like even the first 20 minutes, cause I was like, there's no fucking magic in this TV.
Not only is there not magic, but I read one review and I'm like 100% agree with this. It's an algorithm based show. If you hate characters making jokes.
Yeah.
If you hate it when characters make jokes, this is the show for you, because there is like very little comedic work in this show. It's not charming in that sort of way. It loses that magic. So it's a drama. It's like a teen drama. Like, think about that. Mm. And that's the vibe it's giving off. It's not like the show where it's like it's got stakes involved, but knows where the comedic timing is. Here's the biggest problem. They casted the cabbage guy. Like the cabbage voice actor as the actor. And when he finally said, "My cabbages," he said it so dramatic. And I'm just like, dude. Now he says it a second time, "My cabbages," and he says it correctly. But the first time he says it, he says, "My cabbages." And I'm like, dude, the whole vibe of the cabbage guy was like, "My cabbages." Like, that's all you needed. But it's like,
yeah.
Here's the other thing about the show. I'm going to say this, and Liz said this perfectly. She's like, "I am only enjoying my time here because I've seen Avatar. But I think if an outsider came in and just, it is just inside joke after inside joke. It's just reference after reference of the old show. To have a newcomer comes into the show, it's like, what do they really have here? Because they don't understand the inside jokes here, you know?
To add on to that as well, are you just done now with like remakes and reboots and everything else? Because this is the problem with widespread the arts. So for example, you're saying that and Liz has said that. I think it resonates with the UK Gladiators, for example, because it doesn't have the same magic. So like, for example, when a contestant got knocked off like a podium or something, they'll play Another One Bites the Dust. It'd be like a really big beating noise, and the people would be like this in the crowd. So obviously the kids are doing it, but you kind of look at the kids thinking like they don't know why they're doing it. It's basically their parents that are telling them to do it, because that was the original ambiance from the original Gladiators. It's like, are you just done now at this point? Like, I feel quite done with, like, because I've seen it.
I've been done on, with remakes.
Well, yeah. Like, I've been so done for ages. But it's like, I saw a thing on Twitter where it's like, they were saying like, they want to reboot American Psycho or remake it. It's like, stop. Really? It's like, stop. Have we not gone past this period where we basically even Bob Iger, as much as he doesn't want to admit it, Disney knows that they basically, their model is screwed now for MCU and Star Wars, because people are just turned off. So you basically rehashed the living hell out of something. It's like having your favorite drink every day, like Coke, for example. But there's a moment where you just don't want to drink it. You want to try something different. And it's like, that's what's happening with remakes at the minute.
Yeah.
That's my car. He's just arrived here.
Jeez.
But
it's like a lack of new ideas. Yeah. But like, that's what I mean, though. I think this show would have been great if it was set in between the 100 years without an Avatar. I think these showrunners, I think these writers, I think this casting could have done so well. Like make a show it's set in Ba Sing Se, where they're just trying to protect their people, or even Kyoshi Island, like just those characters in that 100 years, and they're just trying to keep things together within that time frame, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they would have just nailed it. But the fact that they were just stuck in, and there's so many times where me and Liz, like, that's not how it happened in the show. What are you doing? What? Stop doing this. That didn't happen in the show. That didn't happen this quickly. Why are we introducing this character? Because Toph isn't even in the show. And they introduced characters where Toph was important in the story, where I'm just like, dude.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, go.
So we're immediately going to be rewatching the animated series just to get that bad taste out of our mouth. And again, it's not a bad show. It's not a disaster. Nobody's saying it's bad. It's just kind of like, what are we doing? You know?
I think you've summed up everything that is the problem at the minute, where it's like, basically this show is like made for what would be made for people who are who are Zillennials and Millennials. Because you grew up with the original and they're trying to target you. So essentially, I don't think they're trying to target the new audience, as you said, because like it's filled with ham-fisted with inside jokes. It's got all this other stuff with it that you'll know. the problem is as well, I think because like we're at the ages that we are, like, for example, 30 plus and whatever, as millennials, you kind of just like, I don't want to watch this anymore. It's like, if I want to watch Avatar, I'm going to stick the live action one on. Yeah, yeah. The live action one, the one that connects me to my inner childhood. So what you probably have at the minute is with this show on Netflix, it has show producers who are probably our age thinking, let's remake this because then obviously millennials will watch it. And then obviously if we attract a new audience, great, wonderful. However, you basically get to the point where the millennials watch it, or the Zillennials watch it, or the Gen Z watch it, and they're like, well, you know, and you kind of like a little bit here and there, you mix some feelings. And then you eventually get to the end point where you think like, oh, there's a missed opportunity here. X, Y, Z, A, B, C. And then eventually you get to the outcome where it's like, yeah, let's just watch the original because it's got the magic, it's got the art. And also it'll bring me back to my childhood a bit closer because that's what I enjoyed watching growing up. And that's the problem with the industry at the minute. So everything gets to that point where it's like you basically rehash stuff. Same with me as Gladiator. I've watched the first 6 episodes. It's not even finished the series. And I finished it watching thinking like, maybe I should rewatch the original Gladiators because that's iconic.
Bro.
It's got all these kind of...
Yeah, like, I'll say this much, too. Liz and I, like, trekked through this show. Like, both me and her, I'm not kidding you, we were falling asleep at episode 5. We were falling asleep. We're just, like, dozing off. We're like, should we just save the episodes for, like, another day? And we're both just like, no, let's just get through this. Just to say that we've seen it.
Because, you know, you're never coming back to it, either.
Never kind of come back to it. And we're just like, no, let's just trek through it. But we were falling asleep by episode 5 because it's so much dialogue and not enough comedy. It's just kind of like there's no vibrance to this show. It's very, it's dull, but it's not bad. It's just kind of like it is what it is. Yeah. So my Spread the Arse is more of just kind of like I watched it so you don't have to, you know, kind of deal. If you have 8 hours to spare, go for it. If you're really curious about it, you know, it's not bad, but like it's not worth your time either.
It's not like you sold anyone on it. I don't think you sold yourself on it. That's the problem.
No,
you can't
that's
sell
the
yourself
thing.
On
it's
it.
Just like I don't know what the show is for. Like I don't
that's
know who
the
it's
big
for.
Question.
Yeah, like
that's the big question, and that's where the difficulty starts. Where
it's just like, and that's the thing. Not enough Momo. Not enough Appa. Like not nearly enough Appa. Like because the CGI is so expensive, they can't put Appa in. There's not enough Appa. Like, not
your, your Avatar example and apply it to my Lion King one, for example. Who is this aimed for, live-action Lion King?
Yeah.
Who cares about it?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you watch it, for example, when rather you can watch the beautiful aesthetic design of the cartoon drawings you grew up as a kid, and it also feel a little bit of reflection on your thing? Same with Avatar. You basically sapped out the comedy value, sapped out the great moments that made it, like, resonate with young kids.
Yeah.
Why are you going to watch a really dull, boring interpretation of it and that doesn't capture anything? Like, this is the problem with, like, a lot of things that do that. It's the same with, like, Resident Evil. Resident Evil 4 Remake was a good remake. I enjoyed it, blah, blah. And they made it a lot more darker, but the problem is it also you sapped that Japanese comedy out of it. Shinji Mikami goofiness element. And it's like, it's great as a dark horror game and it's cool and stuff. And even though
but
Nick Bosley tries to put Leon's
goofy
lines
in there.
That was
put in their own purpose.
There.
Yeah, the comedy,
man. It's part of the art. It's part of the art. That's why you have like goofiness in these, like, even when I'm playing Yakuza, it's so Japanese developers have a different interpretation of what they're doing with games compared to Western media. And then when you do something like this, you always need to retain the original art of it. So same with Avatar, same with Gladiators. I'm watching it. I'm thinking, like, at the end of it, I'm thinking, okay, this is probably the best, closest comparison someone's tried to pay homage to the original TV shows. However, I'm just going to watch the original Gladiators next time. And you're basically watching Avatar going like, this is missing, this is missing. I'm technically the core demographic that they're trying to target, but they probably don't understand what I really want. You get to the end of it, it's a slog fest. You didn't really overly enjoy it. I'll just watch Avatar next time.
I do want to point this out, and I don't... Here's the thing. It seems like the showrunners, and I just wanted to confirm this because on Rotten Tomatoes, Avatar The Last Airbender, the original show, has 100%. 100% from critics and a 99% audience score. And it just doesn't seem like they studied that. It doesn't seem like, why did it get 100? Like, why is this 100%? And that's what the show feels like. It just feels like we're going to make it. And we're gonna try to throw inside jokes here, but like, didn't understand, yeah. Like, okay, but like, why is it 100%? Even Curb Your Enthusiasm is 92%.
Here's another one for you as well, because we talk about it in that as well. Think about Assassin's Creed when we talk about it. What does every person talk about Assassin's Creed? They scream saying, just go back to the original, go back to what it was, go back to what the actual game was. They basically take it even further away from what the series is. It's like, it's not even Assassins anymore. It's like, why am I in this era, and why is it so actiony? Why is it so RPG?
God, yeah. I stopped playing after Origins. I was like, no, we're done here, dude.
Because as you said, you don't study your audience. So for example, the audience of this core demographic show is going to be fed to your audience, you, a millennial, a selennial. It's going to be fed to that. It's not going to be fed to Gen Alpha and the later stages of Gen Z. People who watch the original are going to watch it. But by the time you finish watching a live action one, you're thinking like, why don't I just watch the original, which keeps the humor, keeps the originality, what made me fall in love with it in the first place.
Yeah. Hey, Preston. That's what I mean. By the way, the live action one has a 59% Rotten Tomato.
It doesn't surprise me. We're currently in the advent of just like rehashing and like redeveloping and everything. Yeah, it says a lot. But anyway, should we wrap up here?
Yes, we should.
So we can continue otherwise. But yeah, thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed that. In the comments, leave us your thoughts on the soundtracks of Life is Strange. We'd love to hear them. And obviously, you can get featured on our next episode if you leave a comment in the video of this episode. And thank you to Dreamwalk, Dream Prison, for leaving that comment as well. And, you know, supporting my claim. Anyway, Strangecast, I completely messed that up. If you are new here on the YouTube channel, please do consider dropping a subscribe on the channel, like the video, share your friends, help support the channel, help yourself keep up to date with the channel. We've got projects lined up. There's a project we're working on, which has been delayed for a month and a half, but we'll get to it. I will confess why it's been delayed. But anyway, yeah, do stay tuned to the YouTube channel, and also as well, Strangecast is available on all podcast services. So you can check us out on Spotify with the video version, Apple Podcasts, we're on everything. And please do leave us ratings. We do really appreciate it. We'll see you in March for the next episode. Take care, guys. Until then, see you later.
See ya.
Oh, I'll see you later. Bye.
Ready for the mosh pit, Shaka Brown.